We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to Inside Mizzou Athletics, presented by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. Now, here is your host, Mike Kelly.
Hey, Mizzou Nation, I'm Mike Kelly. Matt Michaels is alongside. This is the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, which is brought to you each and every week by our friends at Shelter Insurance. Ask a shelter agent about how Shelter's auto policy now includes roadside assistance. Find an agent near you at shelterinsurance.com. How was your week, Matthew?
It was a good week. I'm keeping it home to myself this week, but other than that, I'm pretty good. So the miracles of modern technology have the podcast going, which is
nice. The miracles of modern technology. And actually, you know, I kind of dig this. I mean, where would we all be? Literally, where would we all have been in the last, whatever it is, 8 months, 10 months, without the evolution of this thing called Zoom, or Microsoft Teams, or other type of technology that can bring us all together?
Probably like clawing physically up the walls of our houses. I think that would be about right. You know, we'd see the marks left over, but we get to connect to other people and do a little bit of business and see other folks face to face. You know, we've talked about the gratitude thing before here on the podcast. The fact that we have these sorts of things to see our family, our friends, and our loved ones, we probably better be pretty grateful for, because 20 years ago, a global pandemic wouldn't have been the same way. Would have been a lot more difficult, probably.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. Since you first uttered that phrase back in August about, and it might have been early September, about being grateful, right, and flexible, I've marveled at the number of times that I've heard that phrase being used when it comes to sport and also society, really, candidly. Here we are in November of 2020. I mean, Fred Ridley, the chairman of Augusta National, talked about how grateful those at Augusta were that they could host the 2020 Masters in November. You know, and I know this is supposed to be about college athletics. That, in my mind, was the most important sporting event that we've seen since the start of the pandemic, at least in my feeble little mind. I mean, for me, it's bigger than the World Series. Did you spend much time watching Dustin Johnson's dominance this weekend?
I definitely dipped in and out of it. You know, it was odd for me because I think the time of year has a lot to do with how I appreciate that tournament, and it's a big deal, don't get me wrong. And I was interested for the novelty to see, all right, how does this course play in November. And it turns out when you get a lot of rain in the first couple of days of the tournament, it plays really, really well to the golfer's advantage. So it was kind of weird for me. I won't lie about that, but I was fascinated to see just how everybody handled it, and also fascinated to see that still, in the course of that tournament, the golf course penalized people in the ways it normally penalizes them, and it rewarded people in the ways it normally rewards them. So that part wasn't very different at all.
Yeah, and you can still drive the ball 365 yards, but there's still these things called trees that have a tendency to get in your way.
I thought he was going to do it. I thought Bryson was the man about town. I thought he'd figured it out. And then he played with, what, Bernard Langer on Sunday? Yeah. And Bernard Langer clipped him head-to-head?
Yeah, got beat by the 63-year-old. You know, I think not to delve too much into Bryson or to golf, but I think any time that you're going to a major, you got to have a clear mind about what your path is going to be. And I thought he really hurt himself earlier in the week with, you know, first of all, when he talked about it being a par 67 for him, that's just the kiss of death. And then I think the other thing too is when he's on the range and he's still experimenting on Tuesday and Wednesday with a 48-inch driver, it's a lot different motion swinging a 48-inch club as opposed to the 45 that he eventually went with. And I thought that, you know, compounded the problems that he was having. But at the end of the day, the world's number one golfer once again was dominant in the way that he went about his business all 4 days. I mean, Dustin Johnson was just simply clearly not only the best golfer, but I thought the most composed golfer throughout the course of the week.
He was, and then you get a record-setting performance to see it. I think that what I'll take away from that whole tournament is when you have focus and you have skill, look at the things you can achieve, right? And you can put that in any part of your life. Johnson's worked on his craft for so long to be where he is. He's obviously very talented and very skilled, but he had a focus saying, I'm going to go into this thing and I'm going to just take it for everything I can get. And what he could get was just round after round of consistency. It was remarkable to watch.
Can I have a humble brag? Will you grant me a humble brag moment?
You get one humble brag per season, so go ahead.
Well, this is it. It's kind of like what Bones used to get whatever it was called, where he could wave off Phil. I've played Augusta, so I've had the opportunity to play that golf course. And if I did a little trivia question with you, what former Missouri football coach did I go to Augusta with?
My only reasonable guess would be Dan Devine.
No, Coach Devine would no. That's a really good guess. No, I'm going to take you back even further. Frank Broyles.
Oh wow!
How about that?
Yeah.
In December of 2015, I was in Columbia, Missouri on a Monday night. Actually, I think it was a Tuesday morning after doing Tiger Talk on a Monday with a basketball game coming up on Tuesday, again, December of 15. And my great friend, Chris Harlan, who's from Gainesville, Missouri, starts blowing up my phone at 7 a.m. that Tuesday morning. Finally, after about seven times, I get out of bed and call him back. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, hey, where are you? Well, I'm in Columbia. Can you be in Gainesville? Can you be in Gainesville, Missouri by noon on Wednesday? Yeah, why? We're going to fly down to Augusta and play golf for a couple of days.
Oh, man.
So we flew from Mountain Home, Arkansas, south of Gainesville, picked up Coach Broyles and his son, Hank Broyles, and the four of us went to Augusta and had an unbelievable time. And I have a flag here in my office at the house from Augusta National, and it says, to Mike, best wishes, Frank Broyles, go Hogs.
Yeah, but, I don't think Frank was ever going to forget where his bread was buttered on that deal, huh?
Yeah. So Coach Broyles, a longtime member at Augusta, Chris and the Broyles family, or Chris Harlan and the Broyles family, very, very close. And, You know, I've had the opportunity since then to do things since Coach Broyles passing, to do things socially with Hank, particularly when Missouri's been in Fayetteville for games. And so, yeah, that was my one opportunity to play Augusta National, and I'll never forget it. And I can't tell you, you know, the fond memories I have of hanging out with Hank Broyles, or with Frank Broyles, excuse me.
That's just so super cool. And that's the sort of thing, like, for a fan of sports, and I would suggest even for somebody who is not a golfer, if somebody calls you and says, hey, you have an opportunity to play Augusta National, the answer you give is the answer you gave, which is, well, where do I show up? That's all you have to say. You drop everything else and you do it.
Dude, I was, you know, he said, can you be there by noon? I said, I can be there by six.
Yeah.
set a meeting on the square in Gainesville, Missouri for lunch at noon. Let's meet for breakfast at six. But anyway, I digress. It appears we're going to play football this week.
That's good. I like that.
I do too. It's so Missouri appears to be okay, trending in the right direction. And it's interesting as we tape these throughout the course of the year, you know, obviously information changes on a moment here in 2020, but what will not change between now and Saturday is that Mike Bobo will be the interim coach at South Carolina, the former star quarterback, the former teammate of Will Muschamp at the University of Georgia, comes in from Colorado State as the offensive coordinator this year. And, you know, less than a year later, he's the interim head coach, replacing his former college teammate who brought him to Carolina.
Yeah, funny how those things work out, huh? You know, the Will Muschamp story, I feel like, was the story of great potential and according to Carolina fans, great momentum in those first three seasons. I mean, 22 wins in three seasons for him. That was second only to Spurrier at Carolina. And then the last couple of seasons have just been, you've never been able to get that back. And losing 14 of your last 20 games will get you in trouble with the fan base, certainly. But also the way that they're losing them, it's their defense being porous. And that was always Will Muschamp's calling card. And apparently Ray Tanner and folks over there thought it was time for a change when that calling card didn't bear any resemblance to the head coach and his pedigree. And so another year where Missouri gets to either play an interim head coach or directly after a Missouri game, an interim head coach is installed. It's been an odd theme of these past, what, 5 or 6 years, but yeah, Here we go again.
Well, and this just happened overnight on Sunday. We're taping this on Tuesday. I'm surprised that so far we've only had one Carolina player opt out, that being J.C. Horn, the talented cornerback who is going to prepare for the NFL draft. I mean, in this day and age where, you know, you get the mulligan because you don't lose your scholarship, you're going to have a new coaching staff. I'm surprised that we haven't seen more of the players opt out. Now, they're riddled with injuries, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. They lost their terrific defensive back, Israel Mukamu, this past weekend to a groin injury. He's not expected to play this weekend. Had two interceptions on the season. But, you know, when you're a defensive coach and in the last three games you've given up 159 points and 1,779 total yards, including 708 to Ole Miss, then, you know, obviously you put yourself in a position where you already have the target. But what's amazing to me, Matt, and maybe it spells or gives us a little bit of a message of what's going to happen moving forward, we're in a global pandemic. And we've heard across the country athletic directors screaming that they have no money and that they're bleeding profusely financially. But yeah, Ray Tanner has got at least $15 million that he can use to buy out not only Will Muschamp at 3.3 over the next 4 years, but he can also apparently buy out his coaching staff. I don't know what kind of message that sends to your fan base, but also to those that are just the casual fan of the game.
Well, and I wonder too, you know, there's a real cost to what's going on in the world right now. And it's people and their jobs and their livelihoods. And in this case, it's not to shed a tear for Will Muschamp, who's been very well compensated for many years and will probably be landing on his feet somewhere in due time in the game of football if he wants to. But there are folks in athletic departments, I mean, game day staff across the country that have found themselves out of a job because of this. And then you look at the big price tag that this is, it is $15 million over whatever period of years. And I think for those folks who have been impacted in that negative way, they look at it and they look at it and they furrow their brow and they say, well, what in the world is going on here? You know, we thought, I believe just a few months ago that there were going to be very few of these type of movements because of the financial implications involved, at least for this year, until there could be a clearer picture of what the bottom line looks like for athletic departments across the country. But as time has gone on, it's been clear that that has not necessarily been the case everywhere. And so I wonder how that reverberates over the next year or so, especially if things that are unforeseen in the world of college athletics come to the fore again and tighten these budgets even further.
You know, here's the other thing that I'm thinking about in as we're speaking on this, the 17th day of November. What are we seeing consistently lead basically every newscast other than the presidential transition? We're seeing rising numbers across our country with the virus, right? Mm-hmm. We're seeing universities across the board saying, yeah, we're not coming back in person after Thanksgiving. And what I'm wondering about is, in college athletics, particularly in Division I basketball, are we maybe pushing the envelope too much trying to have a season? And I don't know that any of us have that answer.
Yeah, I think it's really tricky because, remember, from a bottom line standpoint, there was already one men's basketball tournament called off, and it is the cash cow for the NCAA and for a ton of member institutions beyond those with just big time football like Missouri, the SEC, and others. So when I hear news this week that the NCAA is planning on putting the NCAA tournament in 2021 at a single site, it makes a lot of sense to me because they need to make preparations for some sort of event so they can bring in dollars and cents that impact real lives. And I understand that. But to your point about pushing right now to have a college basketball season, to say we need to start it to this degree, I come back to the word flexibility. I don't know that that's actually going to occur, at least in the form that everybody believes. And we're already hearing news start stop about individual programs that have 14 days off just on the eve of the season because of COVID concerns within their programs. I think I saw one basketball game. I think it was Stetson, Miami, pushed back already to early December. Those sorts of things are already happening. And as they do, it is prudent for them to happen. But is there a point, to your point, Mike, where we get so many of these things cascading over one another that somebody from the top down has to say, hey, listen, we can't push forward with this right now. We need to put a brake on it. And I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility, considering where the virus is in so many communities across the country. And our only hope can be that it recedes and things can proceed as normal. But you're right to wonder if the envelope's being pushed is a fair thing to wonder right now.
Yeah, well, and, you know, it's optimistic, right, when we see news of the vaccine with Moderna and with Pfizer, and those are all things on the horizon that are all very, very, you know, that are all good things. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing, too, that people sometimes tend to lose is, you know, again, the mixed message that gets sent. Can't have kids in class, but we can have kids on the basketball court competing against one another. And I just wonder, because I don't know, because we're not casual fans. We aren't. I wonder how the casual fan views that mixed message, if you will.
Yeah, and I suppose the proof of that comes, what, a year down the road, 2 years down the road, when it comes to the interest in programs and to the men's basketball tournament and to the women's tournament, for that matter, and so on and so forth. But I think they're in a really difficult position right now because you're right, Mike. It's very clear that the virus has a hold in ways that it did not in more places than it did in March when the whole thing shut down. That was a case of the unknown. This is a case of the known, but the known being greater and greater. And so as to whether or not we see college basketball go off without a hitch. I think both of us would agree that without a hitch would not be anything close to the nomenclature. To see it proceed, as long as it's safe, and I felt this from the beginning, if people can do it safely, that makes sense. And that probably means, hey, when you've got a test on a team and your team's out for 14 days, stick to the letter. You have to do it, because otherwise we won't see any games played at all. And if we get to the point where that's the only prudent thing to do, then we've got bigger conversations on our hands.
You hit me with nomenclature this morning. That's the first time that we've...
I can't help it. I'm sorry.
No, I love it. I love it because you're helping expand my vocabulary. I'm just going to point out when we hear those words that we haven't heard on this podcast. Okay?
The words that are on the unused pages of the dictionary.
Well, and the other thing too, Matt, that just really quick on this point, and then we'll take a break and come back and talk a little Mizzou, South Carolina. What we don't know is we don't know inside of individual programs, particularly in basketball, how many of those players on that roster have tested positive already. Mm-hmm. We don't know that, right? So a lot of information that's constantly being processed. But, you know, again, as two guys that care about the sport and sports, and two guys that care about, I think, the ways that individual programs are viewed, and I'm talking about athletic programs across the board, those are just some of the things that I always wonder about, particularly when it comes to those that are the casual fan. Let's take a break. This is the Inside Mizzou Athletics Podcast. I'm Mike Kelly. My dear friend Matt Michaels is with us. We're going to take a break after this from Shelter Insurance.
In sports, success is measured in the number of points scored, in games won, and in championships earned. At Shelter Insurance, we measure success in the quality of our products and services, in how we support our communities, in being there when you need us most. In fact, 9 out of 10 people surveyed with a claim would recommend Shelter to a friend. To find out how Shelter can be there for you, visit shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield. We're your shelter.
So I remember the last time Missouri faced an interim coach. It was a year ago against Arkansas, and that went pretty well. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, it was 2016, I think, against LSU and Ed Orgeron, and that didn't go very well. These games can go both ways. You know, you look at it, and I look at Carolina, and again, they're riddled with injuries. I don't know what kind of a hold or what kind of an impact Mike Bobo and his coaches have on that locker room. You just wonder the type of performance you're going to see from the Gamecocks this weekend at home. I do know this. They have changed a little bit philosophically in terms of their approach to offense. They figured out what they can do well, and that is run the rock. And with the young, talented Kevin Harris, the sophomore who went for school records of 243 and 5 touchdowns last week against Ole Miss, which, oh, by the way, George Rogers never had, you know, 5 touchdowns or 243. This is a team that you better give them your full respect, despite the fact they've dropped 3 straight.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Mike. Running the ball, in South Carolina, at least at this point of the season, ranks about middle of the pack in the SEC in terms of yards per game. But I think the top end is what you see against Ole Miss. And if Missouri doesn't have their run fits ready on Saturday night, it might be a very long night, because Carolina will probably try to play ball control. They certainly don't want to expose their defense any more than they've already been exposed. So hanging on to the ball will be important for the Gamecocks. But when they pass the ball, and this is probably why they've gotten away from it, it's not been as good. It's just 200 yards passing per game, which in this league is relatively low. Missouri passes for about 57 more yards per game than Carolina. And the thing that I noticed is South Carolina is near the bottom of Division I football right now, much less the SEC, in terms of sacks allowed. Right. They've allowed 20 sacks so far this season, and they've played 7 games. So for the Tigers to get to the quarterback and finally make that tackle for loss on the quarterback, which has been so elusive this season, I feel like will be a key to the game. Because when South Carolina gets in long third down and distance, you're going to have a chance to pin your ears back and possibly be successful.
Part of the reason I bring that up is what was the group that was that forced Missouri to cancel because of test or contact tracing? It was the defensive line. So you hope everybody's back. And, you know, I look at a game like this and a guy like Nick Bolton, who amazes us each and every game, could have just staggering numbers when it comes to the number of tackles Saturday evening.
Oh, yeah. If he is at the ball as he normally is, and he finds his way through whatever Carolina is going to try to throw at him, and I have no doubt that Mike Bobo is planning already for ways he can get an extra hat down the field in the second level on Nick Bolton. If he finds his way around that, it'll be double-digit tackles. It might be a couple of tackles for loss. Nick Bolton might end up being the key to Missouri's game plan defensively in its entirety on Saturday because of how active he might end up being.
Of course, from an offensive standpoint, this will be, again, the longest layoff since 9/11. You haven't played in 3 weeks. Can you get in rhythm from an offensive standpoint? I think part of the way you get in rhythm, and certainly Eli Drinkwitz has forgotten more about offense than I know, but, you know, take – what the defense gives you, some short stuff just to complete passes and then kind of roll that way. Make sure you're using the run game with Roundtree and Beatty and others. You know, it'll just be good to see Missouri get back on the field and play a game. And part of the question, Matt, still I think remains is we don't know moving forward because of what's going on week to week with testing, but also in terms of schedule. I mean, we don't know if Missouri's playing Georgia this year. You know, we don't know if that game's going to take place. We don't know if it's going to be the 19th. Does the SEC make a decision to flip-flop that to the 12th? You know, just because of what's going on with the possibilities in the East. I think what we do know is that the two teams that are destined for Atlanta are Alabama and Florida.
Yeah, I think by now you can almost rubber stamp it, and Georgia would have obviously something to say about it, and you won't want to foreclose on any team until it's all done. But Florida looked awfully good against Arkansas, and if there was ever a team that you thought, okay, maybe Barry Odom and company have a little bit of something secret for the Florida Gators to disrupt a pass-happy offense, and Kyle Trask was without Kyle Pitts due to a concussion suffered before that game, so they knew they weren't going to have him. And to still hang 60-something points on Arkansas is mightily impressive from Florida. I think that they are the best team in the East. I think they've proved it. And I think they might be one of the only teams out there that can credibly say, we think we can hang offensively with Alabama. And Bama's defense will have a lot to say about that. But as opposed to, say, Ole Miss's offense, Mike, that has had some up games and some down games, Florida seemingly doesn't have very many down games with Trask back there, even against good defenses. So I think the Gators in the Tide in Atlanta is an awfully compelling matchup to see if they can just hang with Mac Jones and company, because I think that's the story for anyone that wants to beat Alabama this year.
Yeah, you know, the thing, though, that I keep coming back to is that those that are having consistent success on offense – have veteran leadership at one position, the most important position, you know, and whether it be, you know, what Trask is doing at Florida, which I think if you drop ballots in right now, he'd be the Heisman Trophy winner, even with the one loss to Texas A&M. I know Mac Jones is going to get some support. Justin Fields, body of work, just not there yet. That's my point. You know, Trask has been state of the art this year. And it's because of the amount of experience. I mean, he's got great playmakers. Don't get me wrong, but he is. It's been surgical in the way that he's approached attacking so far every defense that they faced. And they win the A&M game if their defense just comes up with any stops whatsoever.
Right. And I think of this too. And it's probably a sign of the times in the Southeastern Conference, and maybe it is gone before we know it. But last year, who's setting all the records, not just in the SEC, but in college football? Joe Burrow. And what style is he playing? A wide open style, pinpoint passing. He never seems to have a hair out of place. Trask is doing the same sort of stuff this year in his own way, a little bit different. It maybe doesn't look as fluid as times, but it certainly is as effective. And the game this past weekend without maybe his top threat in the red zone, I think shows everybody that he's on that level. And how long can he maintain it? Who's to say? But worthy of a top 10, worthy of the SEC championship game, worthy of taking their shot against Alabama. At this point, I don't see how you could argue Florida isn't all of those things.
Did you see the story that Alabama may get Jalen Waddle back for the college football playoff?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, that's out there. So I'm thinking about that, but because college football deserves to have its best players play, right? Mm-hmm. So you hope for that young man that the recovery continues to go well. And I've been thinking about Kyle Pitts for the last couple of weeks since he took that vicious hit from Sion at Georgia. I mean, it's one of those deals that, man, you just think about it, and it was both players at an unfortunate position colliding at the same time, because I don't think it was intentional. I think the kid was just trying to make a play.
Yeah, I don't know what more can be said about that. The unfortunate part of the game is that those sorts of things are going to continue for time immemorial. I think the thing that I like about it is the NCAA, when it stepped up and said, okay, we're going to try to crack down on this. And for a while, targeting was maybe overly enforced, but I think they have a pretty good balance now where you can look at it, and if you deem it wasn't intentional, you can use a bit of your common sense and say, okay, well, it's not necessarily a penalty here, but still holding to the letter of, hey, if you hit with your helmet and somebody else's helmet, you've got to take a seat. I think they're trying to strike the balance there and protect players because, I mean, if you're in the NFL, it's one thing. You're getting paid to do this. You're a professional. You understand your risks. Not that you don't at the college level, but you got a whole life ahead of you. And nobody wants to see lives impacted by that may not have anything to do with football in the future, much less a potential NFL career like Pitts.
And let me apologize to his family from Cedar Hill, Texas. Lewis seen, not signed.
It's good that you had it right there, ready to go.
Well, this season I've had multiple pages of game notes and stats and rosters at the ready, anticipating that the game was going to be played. I think if I were to close this screen that you and I are on right now, and if you would look across the board at the top of my desktop, I think I have rosters prepared, my notes, two deeps prepared, for Vanderbilt, Georgia, South Carolina, Missouri, and I haven't started working on Arkansas yet, but that's that's coming up. I'm thinking about other things that captured my attention. Oh my, what happened to Michigan?
I mean, it just seems like a fall from grace there. And if you think things were silly with Will Muschamp and the news that we heard over the weekend, how silly could they be getting with Jim Harbaugh in just the next few weeks?
You wonder why they pulled the trigger.
Yeah. I mean,
how awkward that must be, though, for Ward Manuel as the athletic director at Michigan. You've got a guy, a native son, one of your alums that's your head coach, that this was the job that he coveted, but just didn't get it done.
Yeah, and I think at the beginning of this Harbaugh era, there were the high expectations, and I feel like you can be a victim of the high expectations. So when people say, oh, you haven't won against Ohio State and Michigan State, that's a little nagging, right? But, and I'm not saying that this is the case, but if that ever plays into what's actually going on the field or in preparation, and that starts to get into the psyche of a team, that could be not so good. And again, I'm not saying that's what's going on at Michigan, but I wonder if some of that has happened. And now you had the expectations that were so high, and now people start to lower them. And the last thing Michigan fans want is to lower their expectations and to say, well, we're not the Michigan we once were. And nobody wants to say that. I mean, think of proud programs across the country that have fallen on relatively hard times to their overall success. They're always striving to get back. I mean, think of the Tennessees and the Nebraskas of the world and how proud those fan bases are. Michigan looks at those situations as they're kind of struggling to get off the mat back to national relevancy and say, we don't want to be there. That's why we hired Jim Harbaugh in the first place. So I don't know if it ends up happening there. It seems after the loss to Wisconsin that it might be on that sort of collision course, but time will tell. It's a shame to see for the reasons you said, Mike, because this is a guy who wanted to be there, the Michigan man. He checks all the boxes and it doesn't work. And then if you're an athletic director there or a big booster, you scratch your head and go, well, then what will?
Well, and you wonder what they're thinking in State College as well, you know, with James Franklin, you know, and his team sitting at 0-4. That's not a position that, you know, Penn State would normally be in. And it brings us back, as we're kind of putting a signature on this week, it brings us back to, what are we going to see moving forward in terms of the carousel in college coaching? I mean, does South Carolina become the trendsetter? Do others follow suit? Or do coaches get more of a pass this year because of the financial plight of their institutions?
It's the $64 million question, I guess, because that's, we have to talk in millions and not tens of thousands of dollars, but.
And I don't say this, and I feel like I need to say this, and pardon me for interrupting you.
No, you're fine.
I don't say that lightly because, mm-hmm. you know, I have been around this long enough where I've seen a number of changes, right, in staffs. And what you don't think about is you don't think about the number of family members that are impacted, and that kid that's just getting harassed when he goes to school, and that wife that can't go to the grocery store, and what are we going to do in the future? Where are we going? We think we're going to be here for a number of years, and now we got to find another job. And yeah, we have a buyout. We've got some financial security short term, but you know what? Those other staff members who may not get hired, and I'm talking about those that may be in video operations or in other aspects of the program, recruiting and things like that. We don't think about those staff members that aren't making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And so when I talk about this, trust me, I'm thinking about those family members and the number of people that it impacts.
Well, and I think that is something that any athletic director should be thinking about when the move comes along. In the end, there are very large forces at play when it comes to the college football coach at a major Division I university. But there are so many people that are wrapped up along with that, like you mentioned, who don't get thanked very often, at least publicly, much less thought about by the casual fan, and probably not even very often by the hardcore fan. And they all end up getting tied at the hip. And you do put into upheaval much more than just one person when you make a change at the top. And in the times we live in now, I think that's something that needs to be put under consideration more than ever by folks who are making those sorts of decisions, because they do impact many more lives beyond just the one that hits the headlines.
I think the other thing that's going to change too, or at least be evaluated further, is from an athletic director's standpoint, you know, buyout and guarantee, I think are two things that outside forces are going to look at, or those that look over that oversee their performance are going to evaluate us too. I mean, you know, as you know, we're in a point of uncertainty across the board, as we've talked about many, many times. And I think everything gets revisited during these times.
I think you're absolutely correct. I think that probably takes a little while to play out. I think of something as maybe a harbinger of this is, not to go too far astray, but Major League Baseball. There are going to be some free agents at the top of a free agent market this offseason to get paid, right? And are paid close to commensurate to what they would have expected their market rate to be without a global pandemic going on. And then there are going to be players across baseball who are in the middle who might not feel they have a home, at least not at the price they commanded once upon a time in the market. And it might be somewhat of a reset when Major League Baseball says, hey, our clubs lost $3 billion last year. Well, athletic departments across the country are shorter money than they were a year ago at this time. Do we see that reset in the coaching market as things cycle out? Or, and I think this is going to be the big one, Mike, as extensions get signed and as new contracts come in, are they going to have to be for a different sort of value or a lesser buyout, which is where I think the biggest change will happen? That is a big question that faces college athletics. And I don't think anybody knows which way the answer goes right yet, because old habits can die hard when it comes to the very best of the best. And I'm sure there is a lot of, I think, even public clamoring for a reset of sorts there, whether it happens or not. Right now, it's anybody's guess.
Do the Yankees sign Yadier Molina? Among the topics that we might discuss
could be
in the weeks to come. But I feel like this is an appropriate spot to stop, because Harbinger and nomenclature both been uttered, and so why not stop here? It's always great to see you. Stay socially distant. Stay healthy, and we'll do this again next Tuesday.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Good to see you too, Mike, and safe travels out to Cola.
This presentation of the Inside Mizzou Athletics Podcast brought to you by our friends at Shelter Insurance. Shelterinsurance.com. Wear your shield, wear your shelter. Matt, thank you. Talk to you next week.
This has been Inside Mizzou Athletics with Mike Kelly, brought to you by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.